inaugural podcast of the Christian Schneider blog. Just about a week ago, I switched my blog over to a different server, which allows me to do podcasting and other multimedia and stuff like that. So I thought I'd give it a shot and see what I could do. Rather than prattle on and on, that's what my blog is for, I thought I'd actually have people on here and talk to them about things that are actually important and things that you can actually use, news you can use. That's what you're getting here on the podcast. So today we are going to talk to my friend Dave Grexock, who's I grew up with and who's in a band, and he is going to teach us how to make the most delicious steak you've ever had in your life. Apparently I've been doing it wrong all these years. When I went back to D.C., he lectured me on how to make a delicious steak. He made a spaghetti dinner for us with meatballs that was absolutely delicious. He worked in a restaurant for, I think, about 10 years or so. So he really knows what he's doing. And so for those of you who want a delicious steak, we are going to talk to him right now. All right, we are now joined by Dave Grexock, who's going to teach us how to cook a steak. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, you're on the inaugural podcast, I guess. So how do you feel about that?
I feel pretty good. I'm excited.
Yeah? Did you have a nice breakfast this morning?
I had yogurt for breakfast this morning.
Yeah?
With a little bit of honey drizzled on the top.
Well, that does it for you, huh?
Not quite a steak, but a yogurt.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have we known each other?
Well, going back since high school, ninth grade, I believe, maybe before that, although I don't remember you if we did meet in seventh or eighth grade.
No, I didn't even live there until ninth grade. So.
Okay, I'm glad my memory is still sharp as a tack here. Played some sports together, golf, baseball, had a few classes. Had some laughs, and then went off to college together, and
actually took our orientation trip to Virginia Tech together. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you for pulling me back before I went through the college years.
So there's an entertaining story about our orientation going to Virginia Tech. Do you remember that?
I do. Quite distinctly.
Go ahead and relay that story for us.
Well, I had some older relatives on one of them on the football team, and we went down and were treated like royalty pretty much for a couple days, and were able to secure nice positions at the local bars and be treated accordingly.
And we were like 17 years old at this point. Maybe.
I think we were. Are we allowed to say that?
Sure.
Okay. And our parents were, of course, were your parents there?
My parents were there, yes, as a matter of fact.
Your parents were there. Okay, so it was my parents,
my dad,
your parents, and Dennis's parents.
Yeah.
And they met us and I think saw us hanging out at the bar, and we were trying to hide our drinks, not really realizing that we were at a bar and we were supposed to be able to drink the drinks that we were having. Just a little ironic.
Yes. A little bit obvious to the locals, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure we caused a few heads to turn.
And as I recall, this was actually during some kind of thing where we were supposed to be at orientation.
Like there's probably
some meeting where we were supposed to be at, and one of us may have told our parents, we'll be there.
We took a detour and came up with an extra leg of the orientation that we developed ourselves, I suppose.
And as it turns out, given our college years, that was pretty much an accurate orientation to what we were going to get into.
Yeah, we followed through on that leg pretty much for a continuous 4 years, or at least us. You did you get through 2 years there before you transferred?
Yeah, I got through 2 years before I transferred.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything that I did.
You know, I come from the wrong side of the tracks, and college is getting a little expensive, and I got a scholarship to go elsewhere, so, you know.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't anything that I did that led you.
It absolutely was.
To leave the warm comfort of Pritchard Hall.
Yeah, what a cesspool that place was. All right. So, anything about the college years you wanna recap?
Well, no, just your typical college relationship, just hanging out and working, playing hoops, working out, doing the normal dorm college life stuff. And
Now, as you recall, we used to stay up all night, go to breakfast at 7 a.m., and then sleep the rest of the day.
well, it is the most important meal of the day.
Were you there when they did the when they set my clock ahead?
Yes, I was there.
All right, so
I helped
tell us what
choreograph
happened
the.
there.
Well, we were up all night studying, of course,
Yeah.
and before we knew it, the daylight broke, and you had a big test that morning, so had responsibly slept in or went to bed early, and
Early be probably being like 2 a.m.
yeah, 2 a.m. Well, it's all relative, and we set your alarm clock for several hours back, so you would wake up at I think 6 a.m. or 6:30, just enough time so you would realize it was daylight, and you very methodically got dressed, turned the alarm off, got your books, and walked basically from the dorm pretty close to a mile, clear shot down to the classroom, and all the while we were watching out the window and wondering why you didn't realize there was absolutely nobody else on campus, when normally when you go to that class there's a fervor of people scurrying around.
Yeah, there's 10,000 people usually out on campus. And it was completely empty. But I was just.
And as convenient for us, you wore your red baseball cap so we could see it bobbing all the way down down the dorms and through the drill field onto was it Burris Hall you were going to?
I don't remember the name of the hall, but yeah, it was all the way across
All the way
the drill
across.
field. Yeah. And from the perch atop Pritchard Hall there, you could see me walk all the way. It's good, probably a good half mile to the.
I remember you, of course, liking a good practical look as well as anybody else. We're pleased and commended us for our abilities to pull it off, and we're not upset at all at the scenario.
I recall getting into the classroom and recognizing that nobody was in there. And so I looked at my watch and it showed it was like 6 in the morning. And my class was supposed to be at 11 or something. So I just turned and walked all the way back. I think I just walked right in the room and maybe crawled right back into bed.
Think exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Exactly what happened. Yeah,
Reset my
thanks for
alarm.
bringing that up. That's a good memory, at least on my or our side of the fence.
One of the best practical jokes I think played to any of us.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, what are your qualifications as far as telling us how to cook things?
Well,
What's on the resume here?
well, you know, I'm part Italian, so I grew up in a household where a lot of cooking was going on. I was very interested in doing it, and always kind of came up with my own recipes and read cooking books. And
How Italian are you? I hear rumor that you maybe have.
well,
Do you have a big curly mustache?
I well I used to, but I cover the mustache with a skin
With a
like
fake mustache?
with a prosthetic, so it doesn't look like I have a mustache. Because I can't wear it during work, so I take off the prosthetic after work, and then I'm a little bit more Italian than I am when I'm at work. It's complicated. Let's go with it.
Well, and, now you realize have you watched the Milwaukee Brewers game where they do the racing sausages?
No, but last time you were in town, you mentioned that, and it was probably the highlight of the 4-hour conversation we had.
Well, yeah, it's they have these stereotypical sausages that run, and they have the Italian sausage, and he's got the big. He's a chef, of course,
Naturally.
and he's got this big offensive mustache. I mean, it's almost like WWF was back in the day, where you could have these horribly stereotypical characters and nobody cared. Like you'd have the Iron Sheik, He'd be like, I must kill you.
Now,
anyway, so go ahead.
There's a big curly mustache on the sausage.
Yes,
where is it positioned? Is it in the middle or towards the top of the sausage?
Well, it's towards the top of the sausage, but it's, you know, if you walk into a restaurant and you order, give me an Italian sausage and it's got a mustache on it, I'm guessing that's some kind of health code violation.
Yeah, I was leaning that way. That doesn't seem very sanitary.
Yeah, so, we kind of live on the edge here. Hairs on the sausages, whatever.
Now I can see that online if I type in Milwaukee Brewers and the sausage races or something.
Racing sausages, sure. And I forget, they even have names for them. Like the Bratwurst is Brettwurst. And the Chorizo, they just added the Chorizo last year. Which is, you know, the Mexican sausage. And his name is Cinco because he wears the number 5. They actually have numbers as well. So, I mean, it's really kind of a deep thing.
Now, is there a typical winner to this event?
There's a rumor that they just go ahead and let him race. And then whoever wins. And Cinco has been bringing up the rear near the end of the year. He had the fewest wins. So I imagine there will be some demonstrations outside Miller Park.
Well, he's probably pretty tired because Chorizo is a smoked sausage.
Yeah.
So
he's
already been
process.
Through the ringer a few times before the race even started. High heat, smoke heat.
Now your beloved Washington Nationals have kind of stolen that idea. They do the president's race. Have you witnessed that?
I have, and it's quite amusing.
Now, who are the presidents that are at this thing?
Well, it's been a while.
Probably got George Washington.
Since I've seen it, but what are we? Probably Lincoln. Is he in there?
You tell me. I mean, I haven't been.
I've seen it. I don't recall. I think it's like the.
I think Teddy Roosevelt's in there somewhere.
Is he? Okay. I thought it was Founding Fathers or a couple of them, but I don't know.
It would surprise me if Lincoln's not represented somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy freed the slaves. He at least deserves a foam rubber.
He's all money. He's got a big
president.
Greek column-esque monument in D.C., so you think his protectors of his legacy would want him on the national bobblehead race.
Yeah, but everybody gets a statue in D.C. I think you've got one,
I'm
right?
I'm working on it.
The Dave Gregsock Memorial.
Yeah.
All right, so let's...
We're just trying to figure out what to charge for it to get the money back on the investment.
All right, so let's get started here. Now, I, like everybody else, think that I'm an expert at cooking steaks just because I go to the store and I fire up the grill and I throw them on the grill and I cook it for 5 minutes and think it's all good. Now, you're contesting that. So how should I be doing
this?
Well,
everything that I've read and have experienced is you want to go for a real deep char, if you will, on both sides of each steak. And we're talking about a filet here mainly. You can do this with a ribeye or with a strip steak, but the best results in the steak that I like personally is a filet. So you need a couple inch thick filet, center cut, so that, you know, the meat is intact. Although if you don't buy a center cut and you get it from a butcher, it'll have a string tied around it, which can stay on until the cooking process is done. But this is just what I've read and what I've experimented with, and the particular way that I do it yields a little bit of residue in the pan from the beef and the steak, so you can make a nice little mushroom cream sauce to put over top. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, now pump the brakes, my friend. Am I going to be able to go just to a grocery store and get a steak of this quality, or am I going to have to actually go to a butcher?
You know, I would. You could do this. Actually, you could do this with your favorite cut of steak just from a grocery store that has them packaged in the, you know, in the meat section. However, if there's a, you know, I guess a semi-specialty store, which we have, you know, a Whole Foods or Harris Teeter or Balducci's, any one of those, if they're, you know, I'm not sure if they're, I know Whole Foods is national and international, actually, but if they have a meat department, they will definitely have, and you can order a center cut filet, around 8 ounces is what I would say to start with.
Okay. Proceed. So now you're saying your method is to cook it in the oven.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And this requires a cast iron skillet of some kind.
Exactly. Just any pan or cast iron skillet that can go from the stovetop into the oven. So really like
that. Okay. Now, if I've been panning for gold with the skillet, will that still work?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Because I've been doing some prospecting in the neighborhood and
multi-purpose pan is acceptable.
Yes. It's actually a gold pan.
Gold pan?
So go ahead. Yeah.
It probably will conduct heat well.
All right, so what do I – just go ahead. What do I – set the oven
okay.
at?
Okay. Do you – okay. Basically
– what do I season it with? How are we getting started here?
Set the oven to 400 so it preheats.
I'll be right back.
I'll wait.
Okay.
You want to basically put the with gas or electric cooktop on, I would say, medium high to high. You want to get the pan really hot. And then you want to make sure you have an oil that doesn't basically burn at high heat. And most of the oils on the bottle will say, you know, high heat or medium to high heat oil. You really don't want to use olive oil in this case because it will burn and typically will kind of lose its flavor. I mean, olive oil typically is best for drizzling on salads or different things that you want to eat kind of, you know, raw. Anyway, I digress for a second there.
Or wrestling.
Whatever. Or wrestling, but we'll get to that in a different segment. So, I mean, I just season the steak both sides liberally with sea salt and cracked pepper. Rub it in. I mean, I would do almost so you can coat the top with salt and pepper. You're going to make it, that's going to help make a little bit of a crust.
So there's no need for a marinade in this case.
Not in this case, no. The mushroom cream sauce is going to add a little bit of flavor over top, but just the filet itself is best not really messed around with, other than the salt and the pepper.
See, I was kind of hoping you'd save the mushroom cream sauce for like the big surprise at the end, but you've already mentioned it twice, so you've kind of ruined it.
Oh, well.
But go ahead.
That's
the part that actually makes the steak healthy.
Yes. Okay, so you have the pan, you have the pan on the top of the stove. It's on medium high to high. Open your windows, get the fan going because there's going to be some smoke. Basically, you want to with tongs get the filet, season liberally on both sides with salt and pepper, and then you want to sear it on each side for about a minute. And do not just put it in the pan. The oil should just basically cover the bottom of the pan and let it sear for a minute. Don't touch it once you put it in the pan. It will create a nice crust on the outside of it and basically seal in the juices. So after a minute, flip it over. Do the same thing on that side. And then right before I put it in the oven, I drop maybe a quarter stick of butter in the pan. Right as I'm taking it off the stovetop so it doesn't burn, then I put that in the oven on 400 degrees for, depending on your oven, I would say 8 to 10 minutes, err on the side of 8 minutes. And then basically what that does is it basically seals in all of the juices. It has the crust on each side, and the butter just kind of gives it a little bit of flavor, and that's basically what you're looking for. Now, this is very important. Once you once you take the pan out of the oven, put it back on the stovetop, take the steak and put it on a cutting board or a plate, let it rest for a minimum of 5 minutes. You want to make sure the juices are, you know, to help it cook a little bit more. We're looking for a nice medium rare. and the juices will absorb back into the meat and won't run out all over the place, and you'll get the most flavor possible. But essentially, what you're looking for, and the reason why I like this, and is because you get a nice crust on the outside, which to the taste with the medium rare beef in the center is just absolutely delicious. So the
butter that we're talking about, you just stick it in the pan or do you put it on the
steak?
No,
just stick it in the pan, because what we're doing is that's going to help basically flavor the bottom of the pan with the salt
for what's coming
with
next.
The salt and the pepper and the filet, and that's going to be the base for our sauce.
All right. Proceed.
So the pan's back on the stovetop. Make sure you put an oven mitt or something over the handle. I've reached for it before after it's been in the oven, and it's hot. So what you want to do is you want to have a shallot, a couple cloves of garlic, some heavy cream, some sliced mushrooms, a little bit of basil just ripped apart, and maybe a little bit of olive oil at the end. And what we're going to do is the pan's on the oven, turn the burner back on to about medium, add the diced shallots, add the garlic, make sure the garlic doesn't burn, and as soon as that's in, add maybe a cup of cream to the pan. And what that's going to do is basically take up all of the seared juices and meat off the bottom of the pan as the cream helps cook it off. Once you kind of do that for a couple of minutes, you can add the mushrooms, and you're just basically looking to soften up the mushrooms for the cream to thicken a little bit. And then at the very end, just rip up a couple pieces of basil just for flavor and color. And, you know, you want about a medium consistency to be a little bit liquid, a little bit thicker than when you put it in the pan. And basically what I do is I just take a spoon and to liking, just drizzle that over the top of the steak. And it's basically just a mushroom basil cream sauce and the steak.
So you don't go with the A1?
Well, I don't go with the A1, basically because you're
A2.
Spending, well, A2 is a possibility. So just because
that's like a government secret. The A2.
Yeah, you're spending $30 a pound on a filet. I would forego the processed steak sauce. But again, please feel free to modify the recipe as you see fit.
Now the mushrooms we're talking about, are we talking about like canned mushrooms, or you got to go get regular mushrooms and cut them up? Because that sounds like a lot of work.
I would. I mean, what I use is shiitake mushrooms, and you don't need a lot of them. Maybe five or six, and cut them into quarters, just so that they cook in a brief period of time, and they're not overwhelming to the steak. You could also use just regular white or brown button mushrooms, and just slice them, you know, maybe a quarter inch thick. And, you could always put the sauce on the side, you know, of the plate or in a little bit of cup if you wanted to, you know, not drench the steak. But typically people rave about this and enjoy the experience. I mean, there are some purists who don't like the sauce over it, but it's a nice touch.
Since this is a full service podcast, so now everybody's got their steaks, they're all happy, we're sitting down, we're eating, we're drinking some wine. What are some things we should maybe talk about while we're eating?
Well, we should definitely talk about wine.
Okay.
And drinking
what
wine.
What do you got?
A full body Cabernet would be great. You can find those pretty much anywhere. You could even go with a Zinfandel, a red Zinfandel. It's a little spicy and will complement the steak pretty well. But just ask your local sommelier or wine specialist, and they'll be happy to pair a nice red wine with the steak. But definitely get a few bottles. Was it just me and you sitting? Me and you sitting down to eat the steaks?
Well, if you're dining with a female, is it appropriate to say this Cabernet is as full bodied as you are?
Well,
do you think that would
depends on who you're sitting down with. If the Cabernet is extremely full bodied and you're with an extremely full bodied lady, then
she eats enough of this mushroom cream sauce.
then you may not want to be making the steak with the mushroom cream sauce for her in the first place. But
she's going to make her determination on whether that's offensive based on how full-bodied the Cabernet is. If she takes a drink, she's like, holy crap, this is really full-bodied.
Maybe what you should do to set her up is to have a light body, a medium body, and a full-bodied Cabernet, and have her pick the one that she wants. And
based on her body
based
shape.
Based on her body shape, so you know the impression she has of herself before you leap into that suggestion.
And the lower, the better, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so, okay. So I'm going to be going and buying some steaks later.
Yeah, please do. I'd love to know how it turns out. Do you like your steak medium rare?
Yeah, I tend to go more for kind of the medium-ish, but I'll throw it in for an extra minute or so.
Just take it to 10 minutes then. I would do like eight minutes for medium rare. Make sure you let it sit because it'll still cook. 10 minutes for, medium rare to medium. You probably want to go 12 minutes if you want on 400 if you want a truer medium where you just have kind of the color in the middle, but it's a little bit more cooked. I'm excited for you to try it, and please let me know how it goes.
Yeah, when I was there, you made us some wonderful spaghetti. Was that spaghetti?
No, it was linguine. It was linguine,
I was
but
it the wrong name.
Close.
It was linguine.
it's first cousin.
I'm an idiot. So, okay. But the sauce was delicious and the meatballs, so maybe next time you can tell us how to make
I would love to.
The sauce. And I don't know if that's a family recipe that you're not allowed to get out. Or
no, we'll be happy to share that, depending on how your report is on the steak.
I read here in your bio that you are also in a band. So
I am. I'm the singer-songwriter for the band The Reserves, hailing out of Washington, D.C., and we have one record released, which we released 2 years ago in the fall, so that'd be 2006, and we've completed our follow-up record, which should be out in the spring sometime, and you can learn more about us at thereservesmusic.com or at myspace/thereservesmusic, and it's a
I heard you can listen to music online now.
That's crazy. I mean, I've learned most of that from you, so I do appreciate that.
What haven't you?
I knew there was a reason why I called you back.
here's the one complaint that I have with the band. You guys are a little too corporate now for me.
Well, we do corporate events, so.
I mean, once you get more than like three people in the crowd, you've really kind of sold out.
I know.
I think.
Your
goal should be to want nobody to listen to your music whatsoever.
But
as it turns out, it seems like
there is a fine line
are.
Between having a fan base and writing songs that people enjoy versus being artistic and writing songs that people don't and feeling good about yourself. But we're trying to balance the two.
Well, you feel good about yourself regardless,
most
right?
Most of the time. I am human.
Well, that's good. All right, so if I'll wrap this up and play a song. What song? I have your last CD here. Which song should I play?
Let's see.
What's your Stairway to Heaven?
Let's play Make Believe.
Make Believe. Oh, we're talking track 9 here.
We're talking track 9.
All right. Dave Grexoc with The Reserves. Here is track 9, Make Believe. Go on iTunes or whatever and buy this CD. Thank you for joining us, Dave.
That was good. It was a nice conversation. Thanks for having me.
All right, sure.
Make believe I'm an astronaut. Make believe you are the moon. And I will spend my life trying to figure out how to get to you. Make believe you are the ocean and all those pretty shades of blue. And I will spend my time trying to see my reflection in you. Cause I like hanging out in the city, in afternoons with old friends, looking into the future and what's ahead. Cause these memories, like mysteries, are yesterday's history. Today's the only day worth mentioning anywhere. Like mysteries, yesterday's history.